Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Movies and Booze, I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
This day week, that's March 21st, we will be in the Triskell Arts Centre for our next outside broadcast. Bit of music, a bit of chat, and of course, Movies and Booze as well. If you'd like to be in the audience for that, you can go to newstalk.com/events. newstalk.com/events. That's this day week in the Triskell Arts Centre. I would recommend you do it quickly. Because those things tend to sell out very, very quickly indeed. You may have heard a clink of glasses in the background there. What better way to introduce Jean Small and Fionnuala Jones and Chris Wasser. Good afternoon to
you
all.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
So are these wines, Jean, like the most tenuous Irish connection ever?
The link is so tenuous, it's pathetic in a way.
That's okay. We'll deal with pathetic.
Anyway, so the first we've got a white wine, which is owned by a South African family who also own Ashford Castle. So that's
okay. That's a strong one.
And then we have an Argentinian wine, and the founder of the Argentine Navy was an Irishman. And actually, there's lots of links between South America and Ireland.
There's still a newspaper there that comes out once a month.
There's
the
GAA club in Buenos Aires. Yeah. So it's there's like, you know, because just what people don't realize in the 19th century, an awful lot of Irish went to the South America as well as North America. So there are very strong links. And Admiral William Brown from Foxford in County Mayo, who's born in 1777, so it's not today or yesterday. But this man, like I was reading a bit about his life, talking about derring do, and you know, it was like it would make a great film. Actually, it really would. Mm. But he founded the Argentine Navy, and there's a statue of him down on the docks here in Dublin. So,
all right, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't know if it's still there. I think it might have only been there for a while. It might be now over in Foxford. Actually, I should have thought that one through before I opened my mouth. But hey.
Yeah, so apologies if he's actually in Foxford, being Dublin centric as usual. And is it a bit of a quiet weekend for films this weekend, Chris?
Ish, yeah, a little bit. Although at the same time, one of the films we're looking at is certainly in the top five, the most expensive films ever made. So, and it's going straight to Netflix. So Netflix have all the money in the world, and they spent $320 million on a film called
320 million.
Yeah.
How could that possibly? How could they possibly make a profit on that?
You can't. You absolutely can't. But it's directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, who directed the two most successful Avengers films and are actually coming back to Marvel because Marvel is really in the gutter now. And they studios are throwing money at these guys because they believe they have that James Cameron quality that they can, they can make a profit. But this is not getting a cinema release at all. So yeah, $320 million for a sci-fi action comedy with Chris Pratt and Millie Bobby Brown. And various sort of like the voice talents, because they're a robot in this thing, and we'll get into it later. We've got Brian Cox, Woody Harrelson, Coleman Domingo. So it's quite a starry cast, and presumably an expensive one, because you know, all that money wasn't going for, you know, just towards the special effects. So we're looking at that, and then on the other side of things, a very small independent film called Sister Midnight, which is about an arranged marriage gone wrong in Mumbai, and it was actually nominated for BAFTAs and British Independent Film Awards earlier this year, and beaten by Rich Pepias, who is in the Outstanding Debut category. Rich Pepiat being the director of Kneecap. So, and that was actually maybe the other film that I was like, look, if Kneecap doesn't win this, you know, Sister Midnight might get this. So, yeah, two very different films from opposite ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah, indeed. Now, the Snow White's coming out next week, actually, the day we're going to be in Cork. But people reckon it's a turkey already?
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
But before I even get to that, breaking news as we came to here, Ted Lasso is confirmed for season four, which is a really terrible idea, but go off Apple TV Plus,
gosh,
I suppose.
Okay.
Jason Sudeikis confirmed to return. Brett Goldstein, Hannah Waddingham. I think Juno Temple is still in discussions, apparently. She played Keely in the series. They're heading to Kansas. Should they be doing this again? No. Not really. Don't really think so.
Well,
but
people
then
say
also,
the third series wasn't great.
The third series wasn't great, but at the same time, it does kind of end. So I don't really know. I think you're already... I don't know how you bring it back to the former glory of like the first two seasons, in my opinion. I know there's some chatter around how good season two actually was, but I liked season two a lot, so...
I must say, I never got it. I never got the, I know it
it's
was,
very,
lots of people thought it was very charming, but I just didn't. I just thought it was all a bit too forced, the charm.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know. But that's just me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not criticising people who liked it. Don't take it personally.
It's like the second most watched thing on Apple TV Plus now after Severance. So I wondered, did they just get a smack of that as well? And they were like, right, how do we get all these people to stay? We just bring back Ted Lasso, of course.
Okay.
So anyway, yes, Snow White doesn't really seem to be going down well. As you said, in cinemas March 21st, where you have Rachel Zegler playing Snow White, Gal Gadot playing the Evil Queen. And basically, there's all these reports this week about all the promotional events. You know, there's premieres and the usual things that come with a big release.
Yeah.
And could anything be bigger than this? Is a live, a real life adaptation of Snow White and, you know, big cast, whatever. Very buzzy when this was announced 5 years ago, I think. Basically, for the Los Angeles premiere, they're saying they're not scaling it back, but they're not allowing like traditional press coverage. So I think it's just photographers are allowed on the carpet. Mm. And there's a lot of reports they've done that so that Rachel Zegler doesn't say anything and Gal Gadot doesn't say anything. Also some reports that they apparently don't really get on that well. Again, not very much to read into that.
Okay. And what might they say? They said controversial things in the past?
So like, this is the thing. Like, Rachel Zegler has been seen as kind of a bit of a wild card previously in terms of red card. Because she's talked about like she's very young. I need to preface this by saying she's like 23. She got the West Side Story adaptation based on an open casting call. Not incredibly media trained. Like, I said things before about taking jobs for money and stuff like that. Like, she hasn't come out and said heinous things, but for some reason,
so she actually told the truth.
She told the truth. And then
no,
also,
we can't have that.
She came out and said stuff with regards to even this Snow White adaptation, saying that it was, you know, the original adaptation was very dated about the way the role of the women is put forward in the cartoon, and like the son of the original creator came out and was like having a go at her. She's also been very vocal in her support of Palestine, as Gal Gadot has been in her support of Israel.
Oh, wow.
She's been very critical of Donald Trump. So I think there is a concern around, I think that's the prime concern. I don't think it's a case of she's going to say something a bit silly or a bit kooky that could be misinterpreted. I think they're doing this deliberately to avoid political statements more than anything else.
Okay,
but
right.
There's no UK premiere, which again would be very unusual. But like, despite all this, like in the US commercially, it seems to be tracking very well, because again, not being funny, like, it's Disney. I feel like a lot of families will bring kids to this anyway. But even before this, even outside of, you know, people saying things or whatever, this film has just been kind of dogged with controversy because of even Zegler's casting originally. She's of Colombian heritage. You have people coming out and being like, well, she's not so white because she's not like literally white, even though respectfully we're talking about a fable, that we're not talking about a real life person. And then also the issues around the dwarves and how they were going to be shown on screen. Like, again, there were some reports that they were looking at actors, and then apparently that was walked back. And then the people coming out saying, no, it was always going to be CGI, but the dwarves are being portrayed as like CGI characters as opposed to being used by actors. But you'd people like Peter Dinklage coming out and saying people are getting, I'm paraphrasing, but saying people are getting up in arms about Rachel Zegler's casting and talking about this being a more progressive adaptation when we're also putting forward a film about dwarves, you know what I mean? So, but as I said again, I think the people going to this respectfully aren't really engaging with that conversation. I think those people who are engaged with that just aren't going to go. This is directly targeted at people who like fairy tales, like Disney, know what they're getting. Like, it's princess likes wildlife, you know what I mean? Like, it's an easy sell for kids.
So we don't know if the film's any good or not. Just like, it's all the kind of jumping up and down in advance of it, really, that they're worried.
Yeah, and even with all this jumping up and down, even me talking about the fact there's no premiere and stuff, there's going to be a curiosity thing where, like, I'm going to be honest, I kind of have no interest in it, but at the same time, I kind of want to go out to see how it translates on screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right as well. Like Disney, like they sorely overestimate people's interest in the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, because with something like Snow White, the people who are going to see Snow White are the parents bringing their kids, and they couldn't give a toss about any of the stuff that the actors might be involved in.
Yes, indeed.
That film is just going to make money regardless of whatever Rachel or Gal says.
Though, I mean, is it conceivable that, you know, you live in Bumhick, Idaho, and you know, and then Donald Trump goes, that Snow White film is full of trans people, and they're all been forced to do it, and everybody knows that it's the worst film ever made. Why that influenced their decision to bring their children?
Yeah, maybe actually. Well, do you remember First Man, the Damien Chazelle film about Neil Armstrong? That like there is evidence there that the box office was hurt by the fact that Donald Trump came out and said, "Well, there is no scene in the film, there is no depiction on screen of Neil Armstrong putting down the American flag. This film must be anti-American. Don't go see this film." And it actually hurt the box office.
I could see your eyes actually hurting. They rolled so much there, Gene.
Absolutely. I think and I need a drink.
Yeah, so he can have that effect.
He said that in the box office. Yeah, it took a hit.
Jeannie Mac. And Sharon Stone was dropped from Another Simple Favour. Didn't expect to be.
Yeah, so this has only kind of come out in the early hours this morning. So Another Simple Favour is the sequel to A Simple Favour with Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick, about this kind of toxic friendship. That's a very large overview of the plot, essentially. But there was this E! News Instagram post in which they were talking about the premiere of Another Simple Favour, because it happened recently at South by Southwest. And again, people are analysing it to death over Blake Lively's interactions with Anna Kendrick, and there are a lot of rumours that they don't, again, a lot of rumours and reports they don't get on. They were very careful in terms of how they spoke about each other and everything else, and you could read into it all day long. This particular Instagram reel was talking about them and their interactions. And again, the reel was kind of a little bit biased in the sense that they were implying that Anna doesn't want anything to do with Blake Lively. Sharon Stone then, for some reason, comments under this going, I loved being cast and removed from my role unexpectedly for no reason at all. Loved it. Which again, I think, based on what you're commenting on, kind of implies, I feel like she's implying something happened with Blake Lively, because why would you?
Yes,
like,
yes.
To comment that on that was particular
she in,
role?
I never saw A Simple Favour. Was she in A Simple
as far
Favour?
As I'm aware, she's not in the first one, so I'm not really sure. And like her casting hadn't been reported. Though I will say, like, it's not unusual for people in late stage casting to be caught necessarily, so it could be something completely different. You look at the likes of Adrian Brody, had been cast in The Thin Red Line and was like the lead, and then didn't realise he wasn't the lead anymore until the premiere, and he was only in it for like 10 minutes. That's a genuine true story.
That's
like
a showbiz story, absolutely.
I think this is a developing story. I'm sure maybe there will be more comes out of this, or else probably not, because Blake is doing probably the correct thing in terms of saying nothing. But if it even is about her, could, like, this could be Sharon, like, again, just taking the opportunity to be like, people are talking about this, I can jump on this, whatever. Maybe she's bigger grievances to air with the director, Paul Feig, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. That happened to me once.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. The only film I was cast in a short film years ago.
Okay.
It was only because I knew the guy who was directing it. I knew him from RTE.
Oh my God, nepotism.
Yeah, totally. but I was Satan in this.
Okay.
And it was about a guy getting a vasectomy, and his, you know, his testicles swell dramatically, and he's a terrible time. But there was a scene where he meets me in a park, and I'm holding this very fierce dog, and the dog goes for his, you know, ghoulies kind of thing. But they smeared his groin area with peanut butter. But for some reason, the dog wouldn't go for it. So they kind of, we kind of like worked around it. And then it was going to premiere at the it wasn't my fault. Let me just say that. It wasn't my fault. The dog's fault.
Sorry, I'm still recovering from peanut butter on ghoulies.
You know, the actual theme of the film.
I know,
It
was quite surreal.
Is this a dream you had?
No, and it was premiering at the Galway Film Festival, and I was going to be down there, coincidentally, that weekend. And I was like, text him, go, I'll see you down there. And then he'd ring me and say, sorry, I have to make a show. You know, this is a Hollywood call. And
you were caught?
I was cut out.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I got special thanks too.
Okay.
Which was even more insulting.
That's
really, I think. Yeah.
Isn't it?
I still claim it was the dog. It wasn't me. Anyway,
where can we watch this film?
Don't. I'm not in it.
Right. Okay. Well, this is the 2023 Bouchard Finlayson Crocodile's Lair Chardonnay. And the Red Carnation is the name of a hotel group. It was founded in 1950 by B. Tallman, and she created, you know, you know, high-end hotels. She has a chain of them, right? One of them is Ashford Castle. Now, I was very, very kindly invited by Paul Fogarty, who's an old, old friend of mine. He's the head sommelier there, and we studied the diploma together 30 years ago. And Paul has been one of the pioneers of the wine trade in Ireland. Like, he's worked as an importer. He ran wine bars. He really was one of the sort of bastion of the modern wine industry in Ireland. And he's now running, he's the head sommelier in charge of about 700 wines in this amazing wine cellar in Ashford Castle. And he works with the chef, Liam Finnegan, who is another brilliant guy. And I suspect someday is going to get a Michelin star. Anyway, I did a tasting with the two of them. The best double act I've ever seen. I was crying with the laughter. They are brilliant. But they're both like, I mean, you know the way everybody has this stuffy idea? Like this, for me, because I've worked in the wine trade for so many years, this is not what food and drink is about. It's about fun. And these two lads, Liam and Paul, are enormous fun. But the, like what they're producing down there, food and wine wise, is amazing. So I tasted the whole Bouchard Finlayson range because Bea Tolman, as well as owning Ashford, she also owns the estate. Now, Bouchard Finlayson, which I was lucky enough to visit in 2000 when I was actually studying the diploma, a whole group of us went down to South Africa. And it's down in near Hermanus Bay, and I won't even try to pronounce the African.
Yeah.
Heaven and Earth,
yeah,
what it translates as, right? And it's amazing. It's right near beside the sea where actually the whale watchers go in the autumn to see all the whales coming close to the shore. So we're talking cool climate here, right? And Chardonnay and Pinot Noir were the two key grapes that were being grown there at the time. And Peter Finlayson, who started this winery originally in the 70s or 80s, I mean, he was like a pioneer of the South African wine industry. But now, I mean, Bouchard Finlayson has always been known as a classy estate. And I can say, having been there, it was amazing. Now, it is over 30 years ago since I was there, or 25 at least. So anyway, it was great to taste the whole range with Paul. And I mean, they obviously have a lot more than these in the estate, but this is also available. I mean, you'll get this in the independent off licences. It's like in the 1601 in Kinsale, or Morton's in Galway, Searson's in Monkstown, and of course Ashford Castle. So the small independent niche places will have it, right? It's a kind of, it's a more premium wine, but oh my God. We did a selection of Chardonnays, and this was the one that stood out for me. And the reason was that, first of all, it's Chardonnay grown about 750 metres above sea level in a vineyard located about 80 kilometres from Hermanus. This is all about purity of fruit. They leave the wine on the lees. In other words, they leave the dead yeast cells in there to give a bit of kind of sort of roundness to the wine. It's a blend of old and new oak that they age it in. What I said was relatively young, the structure was sublime, a lovely balance of tropical fruit and a sweetish finish. This is what great quality Chardonnay is, and South Africa as a producing country has no problem producing top quality versions of a classic style. That's literally the note I made when I was tasting with Paul, and it just blew me away. So it's the 2021 Bouchard Finlayson Crocodile's Lair. It's like, seriously, South Africa has so much potential, and we just don't see enough South African wines on this market, which is such a shame. It's got about like 3% if it's lucky of the whole market, and we should see a lot more. And when you try a wine like this, you really realise why what they're doing so well. So this, to me, is a really good example of a very well-made Chardonnay, and I love Chardonnay as a grape. I always have. Fantastic grape. And again, thanks to Paul and to Liam for one of the most hysterical nights. I have just the laugh. Sometimes you just have a night that you just don't forget. And thanks to the two lads, we had an amazing night.
Okay, yeah. And it's a very lovely wine as well. And the two lads sound like good crack as well. Right, so what movie would you like to do first, Chris?
We'll start with the expensive one, The Electric State.
Okay, The Electric State coming up after this.
The Bot Rebellion was ugly.
They don't eat. They don't sleep. They don't blink. I blink.
When the robots deviated from their assigned task, we banished them to the Electric State. 200,000 square miles of secure territory.
You famously never owned robots, did you?
I never trusted them.
There you go. That pretty much gives you the entire plot, I assume. I wonder what happens of the Electric State. So, as you've already pointed out, they've spent a vast amount of money on this.
They really have. I mean, most Marvel films cost in and around 180, 200 million to make. James Cameron, I think, was able to make his last Avatar film for maybe around 250 million. This cost $320 million. And Universal were originally going to foot the bill, and then some sort of decision was taken where they said, actually, we're just going to put it on the small screen. And the filmmaker said, no, we're not. We're not going to do that. And for some reason, long story short, it went to Netflix, where they're just going to do that anyway. So I don't understand what was happening behind the scenes. But I do understand that people are throwing money at the Russo brothers, Anthony and Joe Russo, who directed Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War. I mean, these guys went from making, you remember You, Me and Dupree?
Mm. Yeah.
They made that.
Oh my God, Scream.
I know. And then they made the most successful superhero films. Actually, two of the most successful films of all time. They haven't had a great post-Marvel career. They did that film Cherry with Tom Holland on Apple TV Plus, which really nobody saw. They're actually going to make more Avengers films now for Marvel, because Marvel is really in an awful state. So they're bringing back Downey Jr., they're bringing back Chris Evans and the Russos. So these guys, I think they're vastly overrated, but they have a love of kind of Spielbergian sci-fi, and that's exactly the kind of thing that they're trying to do with The Electric State. It's based on an illustrated novel by a guy, a Swedish author named Simon Stellenhag, from 2018, about this youngster basically trying to make her way through this world where in the past, so at some point in the late 80s or early 90s, humans went to war with the machines. But they're not the kind of machines from, you know, the Terminator films where they already look evil. They're robot helpers that were built and established in our world in the 1950s. It's this alternative past where we embraced, you know, just having robot assistants. And eventually these very friendly looking, because all the robots are modeled on, you know, existing kind of pop culture characters. So they're all very cartoonish. And eventually the robots, you know, at some point in the 1980s went, I've had enough. I don't want to be, you know, I'm self-aware, I'm intelligent. And they just kind of wanted to live their own life, but the human said no. So this war happens. I'll cut you all the details. You have this tech billionaire who's, you know, halfway between a Bond villain and Elon Musk. He's played by he's a baddie. And he's played by Stanley Tucci. He comes in, he ends the war by introducing this more technology. That bit is very confusing in this film. But anyway, all you need to know is that all the robots are banished to this dusty prison in the middle of America. And that's where this girl named Michelle is going to end up. Michelle, played by Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things, because her entire family were killed in a car crash, which has nothing to do with the main plot. Her brother was a genius. And her brother, a robot shows up at her foster home one day who seems to have the consciousness of her brother. Her brother's soul is in this robot.
Okay.
And he's saying, you need to go to this, you know, robot prison and find the actual me. And to do that, you're going to need help. And for some reason, which the film never really fully explains, she finds help in the form of a former soldier turned goofball smuggler played by Chris Pratt. If you're confused, so am I.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit all over the place story-wise.
And apart from being confusing, might it be mildly entertaining?
No, I mean, there was parts where I was looking at it and thinking, wow, you actually can see the money up here. It is quite expensive looking. And some of the special effects are genuinely, you know, terrific in places, to the point where I thought I would like to have seen this on the big screen. But you can spend all the money in the world on making a film look good, but if it has no soul, and if it has no ideas of its own, then it's useless altogether. And that's, unfortunately, what we're dealing with here. I just found this film to be just, it's a Spielbergian knockoff, a Spielberg knockoff. It's a knockoff of everything that George Lucas used to do. It's a knockoff of, you know, all of those really fun, inventive sci-fi action or comedies that you would have watched in the 80s and 90s. It just has no imagination. And it's just so derivative. I thought Millie Bobby Brown, who is brilliant in Stranger Things. I worry that that's going to be the thing, like years from now we're going to be like, wow, she really could only play that one role. I found her kind of disappointingly vacant here. And Chris Pratt, he's just doing, I mean, Pratt just kind of has one, you know, he's not got much range. He kind of has that one character that he plays over and over, and they just keep changing his hair. In this one, they've made him out to look like a trash metal fan. You know, he's got the handlebar mustache and long hair, and you know,
okay, he's worked on the hair. They put a lot of effort into making Chris Pratt. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. Respect.
I would have liked for it to have some ideas of its own. It does have a great cast. Woody Harrelson is in there voicing a robot. Colman Domingo, as I said, we've got Kwee Kwan. I worry too that Kwee Kwan, after winning the Oscar for Everything Everywhere All at Once, he's kind of now slipped into that category of actors that have terrible streaks. after winning awards.
Oh,
like, so
yeah.
Love Hurts and now this. And it's just like, get him in a film that's worthy of his talent. Like, I want him cast in better roles. Yeah, I just found this very dull, to be honest.
Is it on Netflix now?
It is.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix from today, yes.
Okay. Well, that's something to avoid then,
yeah.
I suppose. So Golden Globes, Nikki Glaser's doing it again. Not a great shock.
Back for 2026. Yeah. Not a great shock at all, because she went down very well this year. Quite funny. I'd imagine much of the same next year. Perfectly suits that award show because it's not too serious and she doesn't take anything too seriously. So she's very delighted. We will be seeing that in 2026.
Yeah. And she said, I can't wait to do it again, this time in front of the team from The White Lotus.
Yes, because and TV and film.
Yeah.
Which also
No, it just begs the question, will the White Lotus be there?
I love that ambition. Yeah, I'm not loving it this season.
No, it's it's a vague reach. It's like a copy, it's like a knockoff of itself almost.
Yeah.
And get on with it.
Yeah, it is. The pacing is feels very slow in comparison to last year. And not as funny. You know, Parker Posey's doing her thing, like, grand. That gets a bit one note after a while.
Mm.
I mean, I don't want to say anything about it, what the other characters are involved in, but yeah, it is just a bit like, okay, I don't know. It's a bit sad.
Oh, it takes about 4 hours for anything to happen. And I love this series, but this one, I think it was episode 4 or 5 when it's like, oh, now we have some drama.
Oh, but, right, okay, I haven't got that far.
Oh, you haven't got that far, okay.
Yeah. And it's all the kind of, you know, sequences of bugs and, you know, it feels like padding.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about Parker Posey's accent either. Sometimes it sounds like
I'm kind of obsessed with it, but yeah, I do get what you're talking about. It's kind of nearly a parody of itself, but
yeah,
I like the dynamic of the friend group is interesting, but I need things to start hurtling along now, because someone made a very good point. I think it was a podcast Cinema. They said it used to be like event television, and now it's like someone going to a shop is now the event within White Lotus, and it's like, okay,
yeah, it is, really, yeah. There's going to be the Oasis reunion tour, we know about. So Stephen Knight's going to make a film about it.
Yes, Stephen Knight is creating and producing it of Peaky Blinders fame, directed by Dylan Southern and Will Lovelace. They did Meet Me in the Bathroom, which was the kind of indie sleaze documentary, essentially. They also did the documentary concert film from LCD Sound System, Shut Up and Play the Hits, which, from anyone who I've spoken to who watched that, they're giving 2 thumbs up to this. When I heard this, I was also kind of... Like, they must be in touch with each other. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, when the reunion came out and it was like, oh, they took the pictures together, whatever, but like, they're going everywhere in separate cars, like One Direction in the peak kind of days. Oasis probably in the peak kind of days. But this, like, they have to be engaging with each other in some way, because otherwise, why would they invite? I know there's obviously a money question of it, but like, they have to be on some way decent terms for them to be opening the doors to this. I don't know.
It's going
to
be a better film if they're not talking to each other. It kind of culminates in a punch up in, you know, on their
5th truly.
Game. Hopefully in Dublin. That would be great.
Absolutely. Yeah. No release date, no information other than that. But yeah, this is in safe hands with the creators. And as you said, who knows? Hopefully they do fall out by the end of it. So
it's not like they're getting on widely at the moment.
Yeah.
Lot to think about, Caroline. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
The winning continues on News Talk's Cash Machine. Listen to The Hard Shoulder just after 5 to get that new cash amount, and we could be calling you.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
Caroline seemed pleased in a low-key sort of way. Let's toast her success, Jane.
Absolutely. Okay, we're off to Argentina for our second wine today. This is the 2022 Ben Marco Plata edition Malbec. Now, this is actually made by probably one of Argentina's best female winemakers, a lady called, comes from Susana Balboa Estate. And in 2012, she was recognized as one of the most influential winemakers in the world by Drinks Business magazine. This is one of the wines in her stable. She obviously produces an awful lot. I love this. There's a quote from a fellow called William H. Beasley. Malbec grapes and the wine have been associated with Roman emperors, a crusading queen, medieval popes, renowned tsars, and a treacherous court wizard. So there, you know, the how to sell something. Wow, that's good. So basically, the grape originated back in Roman times, and it was a blend of two, I won't even go into two grape varieties. And it was created and was originally called the Cot variety, and it's got various pseudonyms in France. Auxerrois is another one, Cot, but it's in southwest France, it was known as Malbec. It was transported to Argentina in the 19th century by Amy Pujo, who was a viticulturist who was hired by the Argentine government to actually upgrade their vineyards. And he brought Malbec with him. And so it's been there since about 1853. And the thing is, it's the original clones of the French clones. This is the thing. But what makes Malbec so great is the high altitude vineyards, right? You're up like so, but thousands of feet above sea level. And I mean, the thing about Argentina, it's the only country in the world where altitude is a key factor in terms of their terroir. Every time, the higher you go, the cooler it is. And, you know, the temperature drops by 1 degree and that gives you lovely cool climate fruit. Whereas Malbec grown, say, in southwest France, where it's a maritime climate, you know, Atlantic weather fronts obviously coming across. It doesn't get as ripe, but up, you know, with lots of sunshine up at the high altitude of the Andes Mountains, it's, you know, it becomes a star. This is made from fruit grown in the Uco Valley, which is 1,000 metres or 3,000 feet above sea level. It's aged in French oak for about 8 months. And it's an electric wine which oozes class. And Malbec with attitude. It's edgy, it's lovely. And it's actually in the reasonably priced range. You'll get it in Dunn's, in McCue's, in Kilbarrack and Artain, various independent off-licences. But
do they make much French Malbec anymore? Because I think probably for most people you think, you automatically think Argentinian Malbec.
Yeah, yeah. And now Malbec, Chile actually has, you know, could potentially grow. Yeah. But Chile, because Malbec has become so synonymous with Argentina, the Chileans have kind of stepped back a bit from it. But I've tasted some very good Malbec from Chile. It's pretty well grown all over the wine world and it's used in blends because originally in Bordeaux, it was one of the original grapes used in the Bordeaux blend.
Yeah.
But then after phylloxera, it wasn't really replanted. And so it was, but it went to South America and found its natural home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you will find it all over the world. But it's now become the sort of a very fashionable grape. And there really is this now big following for, you know, Argentine. And people who like red wine drinkers love Argentinian Malbec. And it's literally in the last 10, 15 years, it's gone from zero. I mean, I remember when the first Argentinian Malbecs started coming in this market towards around 2010. And now it's just crazy. You know, it's grown and grown and grown. Enormous popularity. Very,
yeah,
very popular.
Yeah, absolutely. Grape. And that's a lovely example
of it. Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So Tom Holland has a new co-star for the Spider-Man, the next Spider-Man.
Another Stranger Things star as well. Sadie Sink has just been cast for this follow-up to Spider-Man No Way Home. And no idea who she'll be playing, but the rumour is that she is going to be Jean Grey from the X-Men. So,
right, okay.
Yeah. Is
there any point at which they might think, should we just knock this on the head? Because we're spending all this money and no one's...
But the only thing is, Tom Holland is like very bankable and the Spider-Men's have been pretty good. Like, I mean, for what they are, as someone who's not a big Marvel fan, I actually really, like, if the Spider-Man film is on, in terms of his iteration, I will sit down and I will watch it. I find them very enjoyable.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is it a bit of that? And also, I mean, spoilers for a film that came out years ago, but like it's not necessarily a cliffhanger ending, but like it ends in a big way for Peter Parker and his future and the future of Spider-Man and the future of his life in general and how he can ever come back from.
But they're never cliffhangers because you know they're going to make another one.
Well, yeah, but like basically everyone's forgotten who he is, so they don't know who he is.
It felt like an ending.
It felt like an ending. Yeah, like it really did. It's a pretty bit of a downcast ending, but in some ways that kind of nearly made it more interesting as well, because that never happens at Marvel. So again, this is kind of a Ted Lasso thing as well, where I'm kind of like, I don't really know why you're doing this, but Sadie Sink seems to be the breakout of Stranger Things in the way that I think people thought Millie Bobby Brown might be, but because she's done a lot, did The Whale, she's done a couple of other things or signed up to a couple of other things, obviously a huge role in Stranger Things itself and will probably be pivotal with this last season that's coming up. But again, then are they also using this as a launch pad to be like, here's the new X-Men on top of new Fantastic Four, new everything else?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't really know. But yeah, I know you're really excited.
But I also think it's kind of destroying, not destroying cinema, I'll be overstating it, but making it more difficult for your mid-budget films and for, you know, the industry in general.
But they're destroying themselves. I mean, they really are. Like, there is a Marvel film in cinemas at the minute, so the new Captain America, but it's not making the sort of money that Marvel films are making 2 or 3 years ago, because I think there's probably too much of it.
Yeah.
They shot themselves in the foot. They gave us too much.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our second movie of the day. This is Sister Midnight. Here's a clip that we will all relate to.
Hello, sorry, tang kar rahi hu. Chaku chahiye bas 2 minute ke liye. Abhi makkhan hai chahiye?
Makkhan ka main kya karu? Kaisa chaku mangta hai? Kisi ke tatte kaatne ya ghuiya kaatne?
That was just to explain the bit at the end there. That was just when Spider-Man swings into the building and rescues somebody in Hindi. Right. Tell us what's the kind of pivot on this.
Yeah, it kind of has a simple premise, but don't be fooled by that because there's an awful lot going on, particularly in the second half. So it is really about, you know, an arranged marriage in where you have these two people. You've got Bollywood talent Radhika Apte. She's playing a young woman named Uma who has just married this lousy head of ball. His name is Gopal. He's played by an actor called Ashok Pathak. And they are moving to Mumbai together and they really don't have anything. You know, they arrive by train. They arrive at this little tiny shack. It's a one room place where the light barely gets in. And this is where, you know, Uma is expected to just kind of stay there and perform your wifely duties until your husband gets home from work and he has to have his meals cooked. And when he gets in, you have to sleep with him. And that's the way her life is supposed to be. But she's like, no way, I'm not having that. And also, Gopal doesn't seem to really want anything to do with Uma. You know, he barely looks at her. He kind of comes literally crashing through the door at the end of the workday because he's gone out drinking with his pals. So she's kind of knocking around to various neighbours and saying, like, I don't know how to cook. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my time. She gets a job cleaning apartments for a 4-hour walk away from where they live.
Whoa.
So that kind of exhausts her. And at the same time, everyone's kind of wondering, everyone keeps commenting on, is she using a whitening cream? You know, she's looking very pale. She's starting to lose weight. So I won't give it away, but there are various things that happen in the second half of this film that spill over into supernatural and horror territory.
Okay.
Where you're kind of thinking, everyone keeps calling her a witch because she's, you know, very, very different to the other women in the village. And you start to actually think, might she be? Or is she actually something else? And that's, I kind of don't want to give anything away because there are things that happen again in the second half where I thought, oh, this is interesting. This took a turn. I think this is it's a very inventive film. It's from a guy named Karan Kanhari. This is his debut. He was nominated in the Outstanding Debut for Writer, Director, Producer category at the BAFTAs, again losing out to Kneecap's Rich Pepiat. Thoroughly deserved, but again, if Pepiat hadn't won, I would have given it to Karan Kanhari. A ton of British Independent Film Awards. This was a hit at Cannes last year, and I'm very glad the films like these are being made, because this, it took Karan Kanhari 10 years to get this made and to
wow.
get it to cinemas. So
yeah.
It is very much, you know, not just a directorial debut, but a real, you know, blood, sweat and tears passion project. And it's terrific. I mean, it overextends itself in places and it kind of, not everything fits. There's an awful lot going on theme wise. But we need films that take big swings like this one does. And also for fans of Wes Anderson films, they might like this a lot, because a lot of the time you've got the actors looking at the camera and communicating with the camera as though they're kind of, you know, breaking the fourth wall and talking to us. You've got these heightened bursts of physical comedy, sometimes, you know, in the mold of like Buster Keaton or again kind of Wes Anderson films. And you also, it's a film where, you know, you might have heard from that clip there that it does go to some strange, unusual and very kind of sarky places. It doesn't really have all that much dialogue. Like there are kind of, it relies heavily on physical comedy and sort of all of these, you know, as I say, heightened outbursts. But it kept me invested all the way through. Again, there are times where, you know, maybe kind of hangs about longer than it needs to in terms of its runtime, or it doesn't really kind of explain various sections of the plot, but fabulous to look at, brilliantly performed. And again, I think we do need more films like this.
Yeah.
We've just been talking about a film where the director spent $300 million on a whole lot of nothing. You've got this independent filmmaker from Britain who spent a tiny fraction of that on something so inventive and so entertaining, and I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing what he does next.
Yeah, because that's interesting, because if you just read the top line that's about Enraged Mind, you think, oh, this might be a bit grim. That sounds far more interesting.
Oh,
Oh,
it is, yeah. Inventive and quite clever and very funny in at times too.
Yeah, okay, that's good. That sounds very positive. Right, and finally, they've given a date for when Black Mirror is coming back.
Black Mirror,
the umpteen series of
season 7 coming to Netflix April 10th. So we have the sequel to USS Callister with Kristen Milioti, which people remember from a couple of seasons previous, went down very well. The cast from Bandersnatch are reuniting for an episode. Bandersnatch was the one where you kind of picked what ending you wanted. It was like interactive. It's not a sequel to that, but it's like Will Poulter and the other actor whose name escapes me. But yeah, Chris O'Dowd, I think, is in it from what I saw from the trailer. So yeah.
Yeah, that must be. Now that's work, I would imagine, because that every single episode requires so much creativity. The stress on that must
yeah.
be.
No, I will say last season was a bit... was pretty hit or miss, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Okay, we will see. Thanks to Fionnuala, Jean and Chris. That's all we have for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.
I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.